Hello everyone, this is Incredible Fencing Podcast. For more information, you can visit my website, subscribe to my YouTube channel or Instagram page. Hello everyone, this is Incredible Fencing Podcast and my name is Taras and welcome back to this new episode. And I haven't been recording episodes for more than 2 months, and the reason is I was taking the break and I was a little bit busy with daily stuff. And this is new episode of season 2, because season 1 consisted 10 episodes with few guests. I hope those guests told us a lot of interesting things for listeners. And today I invited another guest, the legendary coach from UK and Polish fencer, Maestro Zimek Wojciechowski. I think if you are familiar with fencing, you know Zimek for sure, and you have heard his name somewhere before. And let me introduce him a little bit. So he's a Polish fencer, and he was participating in Olympic Games in 1976 in Montreal. And after he started his coaching career, he's got a lot of great students who showed amazing results on the piste on many international and national competitions. And recently he published his book, his encyclopedia of fencing, which is called This is Fencing. And I think if you want to read it, you can purchase it in internet and get it delivered anywhere in the world. So don't hesitate. If you love fencing, just do it, and you can find out a lot of useful tips in this book and many approaches to practice fencing and to coach fencing and just learn fencing in generally. And I'm not gonna talk too long time about this, and I think this is our conversation with Zimek Wojciechowski, and here we go.
Hello.
Zimek, thank you for accepting the invitation for this call.
Right, pleasure.
It's a big honor to have you in this podcast. I was researching many interesting things about your career, and I've read actually your book a few times. This is Fencing. So I read it a few times, because after I read it only one time, I got so many information in my head, you know, so I couldn't memorize all of them, because it's I think it's kind of like encyclopedia of fencing, right?
What do you think? Thank you. You make my head very big now.
I mean it. I think it's a comprehensive approach for everything, like how to do coaching and fencing training. So especially for maybe coaches who are basically just started recently to coach kids and fencers. So it's very, I think it's great to have such such information, because fencing is kind of not super popular kind of sport, like football, for example. So we don't have much access for information. So I think you've done a unique job to deliver the information to all people who want to improve their coaching skills and techniques and find out something new.
Thank you. It was, I was, I ended up in hospital, with heart problems. And I was told that this is quite bad situation. So I thought I may not have enough time. So I decided to write quickly everything what I know about fencing. So, so to share with the younger guys who just started, because I devoted my life to fencing, but luckily my heart recovered, But what triggered that book, really? The fact that I found myself in hospital and suddenly had lots of time to to spare, and I decided I'm not going to waste it. I just you know, time is so important because I may not have much left, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, and I from that moment I carry on and off when I recover, and finally I had a great help from Christopher Flatnagel, who is an Australian fencer. He's one of my fencers. He is a linguist, and he helped me with the translating this into the English, which could be comprehended. Because writing about fencing is certain to describe exercise is quite hard to make it readable for most who read English. I must admit, I got good feedbacks from some parents saying, I don't know anything about fencing, but I can understand what you wrote. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very, very useful whenever you write your book. Maybe ask someone who is good linguist to help you with.
I think it's very intelligible for me. It's very intelligible because I know you speak Polish, and you also you have
Russian a little bit.
In Russian. I think you speak Russian very well.
I've
heard.
I spoke a little bit. Yes.
Yeah. How many languages you speak?
Unfortunately, I don't speak as many languages as Richard Adam Cruz. Richard Adam Cruz and Tovalides Alex speak fluently five languages each of them five. Some of them very difficult, like Arabic. So I will never reach their linguistic skills. But yes, but I can say I can speak kind of okay Polish, Russian, and English.
Polish, Russian.
And it's very interesting. Because if you want to say it's the same thing in Russian, for example, you get some kind of much more emotional meaning, much more different meaning, you know, half of same thing. Mm-hmm. For example, polye boya, we call it pist, but Russian call it polye boya. This is field of the battle.
Field of the battle,
If you go on the polye boya, field on the battle, you feel like you are going to, you feel different than if you go on the pist, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is an example of how useful is to, speak some languages, more than one.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, it's, when I read your book, I feel a little bit of influence of the some Soviet school, right?
So yes, absolutely.
So I
spent lots of time talking to Russian coaches.
Yeah,
I wrote lots of Russian books written in fencing because luckily I was able to read Russian, and of course Polish professor Tchaikovsky was very famous for his theory about sport, our sport. He was very productive. But Russian literature and Russian coaches had tremendous influence. Yes, I remember inviting Alex Zuyev, who was coaching. Very, very beautiful Russian style fencer, Ilichko, who married Ibrahimov. Yes, Ilichko. And he also many others, but I invited him. And we spent night after night talking about fencing. It was just like a brainwash. I was so excited about his Russian, really tremendous know-how. About fencing,
It's like
so, it was very much.
I think when two people who are fencers and who love fencing, I think they can talk about fencing for many hours without stop.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Yeah. So.
And another one was Alexander Press, who is very active coaching now. He was coming down to London many times with the team organized in Russia. We invited Russian ambassador to Lansdowne Club in ballroom, beautiful historical center of London, Mayfair. We organized and we had a big audience, and then. And we have a training together, the team like Kowalski, Rigin, Sedov, Zasorin, this kind of guys. They were wonderful fencers, and we have great time together. And so that's another person to influence me a lot, Alex Press. And also Oleg Maciejczuk, who is kind of ex-Soviet, now Ukraine, but
yeah,
you know, still the same system, same. I spent lots of time discussing fencing with Oleg and learned lots of things from Oleg. And also, even someone who became a coach in Italy, Oleg Puzan, for example.
Yeah.
I had some good time with him. We would discuss fencing on one of our training camps, I think.
Okay.
Like Oleg Puzanov, who passed away a few years ago. He was coaching Epe in Italy recently, yes. But same time, I had I had eyes open because, like you know, we always, nothing stops. Everyone is working on some improvement in every field, and sport is one of them. And like I'm fascinated with Italian coaches. You know, they are really very interesting. I was very fascinated with Maestro Di Rosa. I interviewed him and watch his lesson and discuss with him. I was fascinating. Obviously, I discussed a lot of things with, for instance, Alexander Romanenko, who was five times world champion, you know.
Yeah.
We talk about fencing, but talking about, I also look at the French coaches. I took part in some seminars of organizing in France, and also I did manage to actually, French invited me to run coaching clinic for them, so that was quite interesting. I'm trying to pick up anything what I notice looks useful to see whether I could do something, and also learning from other, if you like, weapons like saber.
Yeah,
we can pick up lots of things from saber, and also learning from other sport like Tai Chi, for example. I introduced to fencing preparation. I call it Tai Chi step. It's nothing much more different than Golubitsky preparation. We're starting with foot, taking hand away, and then producing feint afterwards, you know, with kind of very fluid movement. But because I do Tai Chi myself, and I find very close to this kind of motion, this kind of fluid motion, very very much like Tai Chi anyway. So things always, fencing always develop, everything always develop, and nothing stays still, of course, understatement, but we have to keep eye on everyone in the world, you know, everyone
who
is working hard. When you work hard, you know, doesn't matter. If you work hard and you have the system, you work hard, you will always, this philosophical principle, quantity turns into quality. So if you do something a lot, eventually you start changing, you start improving. Obviously, you become more efficient, but you start improving.
Yeah.
You start looking for new ways. And I can see how, because I'm quite old guy, over 40 years of coaching, I see how
you look still young.
Changes. Sorry, what do you say?
You say I say you look very young. If I look, I saw you last time, so you look like as colleagues.
You make my day. No, I'm lucky, you know, probably one of the things, I'm young because I'm doing fencing with young people, you know. I'm very active. They force me to be active, and I think this is very important factor. We are very lucky to work with youngsters.
Yes, you're right. So that's a good point. So what do you think about fencing schools? Of course, like last time, like maybe last 10 years, we have a very good internet, Facebook, and all social media, so people can share some experience. But still, there are some like differences in them, like the strongest school. So I think, like, if you take, for example, Russian school and compare it with Italian school, there are quite distinctive like things, yeah. So on them. So, do you think, like, if you follow already like Russian school or French school, so like how you can adjust something if you want to take something from some Italian school, right? So can you mix them, or is better to follow only one direction you already like started?
Well, First of all, that philosophical statement, many roads leads to Rome. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very true with our sport. Many ways. There is Italian way, there is Russian way, and there is French way, it's American way, there is mixed way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I personally think that, as I said before, it's better to create your own way, the way you feel. Mm-hmm. It's like composing music, okay? You don't try to play Chopin. If you consider yourself as a composer, you compose something which it's you, and which you really agree with you, which you really feel inside of you. And I think same, and what you think as well. I don't see any reason why we all should create our own way forward. Of course, whatever you like from each school and whatever you think, it works in practice as well. Because for example, you know, I like certain things from Italian school. For example, coordination between arm mm-hmm. and legs in certain actions. For example, I like the idea of making a beat attack with a step lunge or step mm-hmm. on back foot or first step, for example, or I like the idea of making feint, very late feint on back foot or first step when you do step lunge.
Yeah.
You know, and these things are very Italian. However, I struggle a little bit with the idea of not going back with the pari, because Italians don't like going stepping back. When attack starts, they want to stand still and parry it. Mm-hmm. And they maybe think, why should I move back if target will be quicker available to hit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's their philosophy. I can understand that point, but I prefer distance first, prepare distance and then parry whenever attack finished. Yes, last mm-hmm. moment or first moment, of course, but we were talking before about this last moment parry. And you mentioned even after putting front foot down, you still parry a little bit later, mm-hmm. so as late as you can.
Yeah.
And for instance, I prefer more feet, but recently in certain exercises, I start encouraging fencers not to move feet, you know, when they parry in certain situations. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the overall message is to go your own way and take what is the best from everyone.
So you need to create your...
That's my philosophy.
You basically create your own style, depends of the feeling, right? So if you feel
to some extent, yeah. But for example, you can to some extent, but you can say if I pick up most things from Russian school, you can say, oh well, this is you know, it's like having a pedigree dog and dog mm-hmm. which is mixed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My dog has got lots of from Russian wolf, but I've got also French poodle and
yeah,
and maybe Italian, I don't know.
yeah, exactly.
And Polish as well. Polish yeah. horse. Yeah.
That was I meant because now everyone is actually like in this world. I mean, like not last year because we had a pandemic, but like before, everybody could travel a little bit more than maybe like 15 years ago, right? And everybody's got
yes.
good internet, good connection. People can go to training camps, share experience.
Yes.
So basically, do you think in 20 years, probably the fencing schools are going to be like very mixed?
I believe so. I believe that this is how it seems to be going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because even in Italy, you know, you have coaches coach a little bit different. And mm-hmm. of course, I can see how Italian style developed. This long time ago, it was very, very classical, like Italian style, very army, very extended in supination, you know, like front, mm-hmm. front hand extended, sitting low. Of course, now they still sit low, of course, but
yeah.
they move towards arm in tears. And guard in tears, right?
Yeah.
But and step forward starts with front foot, not with the hand, mm-hmm. you know, not hand first. But and you take point away to invite opponent. So it's a kind of like dynamic preparation. So anyway, so even within Italian style, there are some changes, some differences. Mm-hmm. Not every coach Italian coach teaching tears. Not every Italian mm-hmm. coach, for example.
Yeah, I think Italian school is also very different. So because they As I've been told by one Italian coach, in Italy, everybody tries to find something, make some innovations in the style, and they every time changing.
Yes, they are very creative. Italian are very creative. You can see architecture, you can see art, you can see in the music, opera. They are very creative people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And obviously in fencing as well. And for example, Paolo Paoletti, who coaches Baldini, right?
Mm-hmm.
He coaches totally different, more classical actually than some, you know, than for example Maestro Di Rosa from who coach Numa Borella, and Cipressa. Yes. So, you know, that's the most kind of visible change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Difference between Italian masters, at the moment.
Yeah.
So yes, you are right. I believe in 20 years' time, there will be just the most, everyone looking for the most effective style of fencing. And of course, fencers do have their own feel, what works, what doesn't. You know, we have so many different styles because, not so much because of school of fencing, but because of personality of the fencer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right.
Who can develop a particular way of fencing.
Yeah, everything is changing.
Chermisinov is incredibly, Chermisov, for example, is incredibly different than most people.
You mean most people in Russia, Russian fencers are in the world?
Russian, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got unique style as well.
Russian fencers used to look very similar to each other in my days when it was Soviet time, you know, long time ago, before 80, in 70s, you know, 67s, long time ago. And now they are, of course, they don't stand still. They develop. Young coaches develop. They learn from old coaches, Malayenko, Arkadiev, then Midler, and now obviously Mamedov and all others, Shevchenko, they're all students of, for example, Midler, and Midler was probably a student of Arkadiev, but, you know, but they all changes, they're all adding something from their own, you know, experience and thinking.
Yeah. All right, Zhimik, I have some other question about the names of the fencing actions. When I read your book, everybody can find the many, sometimes funny, sometimes different names for different actions. So some names I heard before, like Gorbushka, right? So you call it when somebody hits it.
Gorbushka, you know, Taras, I like the idea of individual names for certain actions, particular, maybe even situations sometimes, like some backline. I call it Defense of Stalingrad. Because Nikita Sergeyevich Khrushchev came from Stalin and said to the troops, look, not a single step back, because you will be shot by our soldiers, military police. So if you're on the back line, you can't go a single step back. You are dead there. And you have to face the music, face the opponent. So, you know, I call this situation backline defense of Stalingrad. But I like it because, you know, I like history. It reminds me, you know, it brings this meaning of that awful situation when you are cornered. And for example, you know, that name like defense with distance, I call it Shahput after one of the Arabic guys. It adds to the culture of our sport, adds something extra. You could potentially create a universal language, name officially, this is this. And to some extent, this exists, you know, this official, for example, defense with distance, we call defense with distance, I guess, yes?
Exactly.
But it's defense with distance.
Yeah. But if you call it Shahput, it's easier.
It's one word, Shahput.
Yeah, Shahput.
It's clear. It's everyone knows. Shahput was the name of Arabic prince who came to have a lesson when my friends were practicing on next week's exercise set to defend with distance. You know, like they were allowed only maximum three element forward, and they had to give initiative back. And from time to time, one of them commit, and the other has to defend, and then hit back and chase back. You know, no blade action. This kind of this. This is a very good exercise. Being creative, you know, Chandler Watson, created that that touch. He called it Champlay, from Champ, not from his name.
Yes, it's very nice. So basically,
it's all good.
Some of the names you created by yourself, but some of the names you were just it's already known before, I think, right?
Yes, sure.
So we're just creating some connection.
Garbushka was when Sveshnikov started doing this. Hits on the back of our fences, my coaches.
Oh, okay.
They call it garbushka themselves. It's Polish language, a little bit Russian, really, from Russian, but babushka, garbushka, you know.
You have the same word in Russian, Polish, right?
Yes, long time ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's actually very... I think it's very convenient way to call some long word names, right? Like distance defense. So
yes.
So when you strip coaching, for example, you can say one word, right? And your fencer is going to understand exactly what you mean and exactly what's your advice, right? So just one word and.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very much so, and it's just more economical, and also it applies to your and fencer's imagination somehow. And imagination is very powerful. Imagination is something very, very helpful with our everyday life, with the fight, face opponent. When you train, when you give lesson, when you take lesson, imagination. When you learn, basically, imagination is very important, very powerful. So anything which kind of helps to trigger imagination working. It's helpful.
Zhimik, I see you were participating in Summer Olympics in Canada, right? It was in Montreal.
Yes, 1976.
So
Fabio D'Azzotto won.
If you take Olympics at that time and Olympics like in modern times, like Rio or London, what's changed if you compare with that time? What's changed in modern Olympics? Does it become better or from the other hand, it's like it's becoming like a little bit different? And like, what's your feeling about that?
I think is that sport in general, Olympics as well, follow the same pattern. Basically, sport is for Olympics as well. It's not so much like used before athletes for humanity, but to be now more for spectators, for media. So anything to make it more attractive for media, for spectators, has been introduced. You know, of course, I'm not talking about changes in tank equipment, you know, all this technical stuff, you know, the way people, you know, focus, organize everything. Olympics is more for now and will be, I think this trend still exists, more commercial, more for spectators, more for media, more for making, I would say for making profit, yes. But of course, this Olympics will be totally different because of situation we're in, you know, this COVID, but overall, you know,
Because
no spectators are in the
Yeah, there are no spectators allowed there.
You know,
yeah,
this Olympics actually might be a little bit closer to the. This is Olympics just for athletes, really.
Anyway, it's better than nothing especially for many athletes, right? So, it's like reminding me a situation when you're preparing a long time and then you just get your maybe competition of your life cancelled, so it's not so many people maybe even cry. I remember
this was unusual. Yeah. This was
I remember Olga Harland said once.
Yes, what did you remember?
She was like very upset when they cancelled Tokyo. Mistaken when they cancelled Tokyo Olympics last time, so she was almost crying, and like because it's really. It's a big, very big and hard work to prepare, and then you get just cancelled.
No, absolutely. I think you know, absolutely. I think that this is a unique situation now. We haven't been sport overall never been in that situation before. This is absolutely awful, you know, anti-climax, setback, disappointment for so many athletes, the cancellation of Olympics and cancellation of various tournaments. I remember people went to Anaheim, Grand Prix. And day before Anaheim, this was announced it's cancelled. So again, what everyone's getting ready and suddenly.
Yeah.
So, but
I remember.
You know, this things never been before, or very rarely. This kind of stuff which you now experience is some unprecedented.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been vaccinated already?
Yes, I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. I got Pfizer to vaccination. Yes, very lucky.
Okay. So how you feel after? Oh, everything is fine.
Well, I am very now. After having the first dose, I was so much more going out and doing my lesson on open air when it was allowed. You know, I knew that I won't pick up anything, and I knew that I. Very unlikely I'll transfer something to someone else, you know. So I was obviously wearing masks and in fact, three masks. One stage I wear proper medical mask, then fencing mask, and on top of fencing mask I wear visor, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So
three,
you have
three protection.
Three layers of protection.
Layers, yes. But now I'm very, very confident. Although there are all these new, you know, mutants all the time happening, but so far this vaccine is still effective. Maybe not that much, but still effective enough to deal with this so far.
Yeah,
and then they probably produce some booster. Yeah,
I hope it's gonna get better. So we are happy we live in modern times, right? So medicine works pretty fast, so they can produce produce vaccine also fast. Zimik, we had FIE Olympic qualification. It was in Madrid, and I remember some athletes, they were very upset because the way of Olympic qualification, right? So I remember they even wrote some posts as like, many European athletes, they don't have many chances to be qualified to Olympics, even though they are pretty strong. So do you think do you have any thoughts about maybe just some suggestions for how we can optimize this system to make sure more strong fencers can get to Olympics, so we can actually see more. So Olympic Games could be also quite even more interesting to watch in future. Do you think it's possible to increase number, or maybe just change the teams and individual tournaments, they separate them, so we need to qualify separately to individual and separately to team events? Do you have any thoughts about this matter?
Well, I certainly agree with you. That's a good point. Olympic Games isn't represented adequately. Objective is strength of fencers across the world. I agree with your daughter, and I agree that change has to be done. I have no doubt there will be change, but I didn't actually spend any time thinking what would be the most logical here to probably increasing number of participants. It would be rather impossible. There's more events. I think we increase number of events and number of places they try to keep to the very much limit. So this is why we are very to get your 12 medals, sets of medals for team.
Yeah.
Thanks to Usmanov and thanks to president of International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach.
Yeah.
For that change. We're very lucky to have a full, but certainly What I think it's in Olympic Games interesting that on one hand we want as broad representation. It's not such an easy issue. Broad representation of people from want to develop fencing.
Yeah, from everywhere in the world,
across many countries. So if it's somewhere like Senegal fencing, mm-hmm. it would be nice to bring this on the map. On one hand, but on the other hand, we want quality. Yes, we want mm-hmm. fencing. Sport is all about Olympic sport is all about human limitation. You know, boundaries, how far in any direction. You know, in the mm-hmm. terms of kind of mental stamina and explosiveness, speed, precision, you know, all these, you know, factors which we develop and experiment with in high performance sport, all these elements. So in that sense, obviously, it would be good to have as high standard of mm-hmm. participants as possible. And I think something has to be done in this direction for sure. And on expense of this lesser country, they have to wait longer. They have to develop really good, high caliber players mm-hmm. to be allowed to compete. But at the moment, it's kind of like, it's certainly, you know, Europe is such a strong nation, fencing nation. Mm-hmm. And Europe is so, you know, only got one place in this individual. In the past, there were slightly more, like in women's foil, there were more, but of course, then when there was, if there wasn't team, then the individual got more places. But mm-hmm. at the moment, it's really, really tough. One person only per zone, so very tough.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
I think something has to be changed, but I have no clear idea which direction.
Some people suggested to reduce to those people who qualified through team. Let only two people from team participate in individual. So mm-hmm. individual, we can have more individual places. Which can be like contested in the zonals, for example.
That's good. That's a reasonable point. Instinctively, my first impression is I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. And probably it's something which could happen. Changes will happen inevitably. Mm-hmm. Nothing stands still. Nothing. There will be some changes for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully. They basically the FIA tries to change something every 4 years, right? If I'm not mistaken. So every 4 years there are some suggestions about changing the rules a little bit. Yeah. Not all of that rules stays. Right, stay with us, because I remember mm-hmm. in Beijing it was transparent masks, right? But then after 1 or 2 years they had to cancel it because it was not mm-hmm. not as safe as they thought before. So yeah,
rules will be changing all the time. It's never ending. Interpretation of rules will change, referee will start changing slightly the way they interpret it, and in fact, in my opinion, our rules has to rewritten, redefined, mm-hmm. using again some good logical language. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because lots of mm-hmm. things are just lots of things mm-hmm. referee interpret, but it's not nothing.
That's a good point. We had many ambiguous calls, right? So you can give point to the either side. So. They could put some more information about the right of way, right? In foil, especially.
Yes.
So about
that, and various other things. For example, you know this thing with some people when they parry and they mm-hmm. riposte, they also rotate body. Mm-hmm. Now this is not very clear. You can go. The rules should specify that particular situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you move your body in down or up or sideways when you riposte, or you are not allowed? At the moment, there is no such thing. And if some referee, if they see bodies moving around, they don't give it. Mm-hmm. And some referee give it. Of course, if you turn your back completely, it mm-hmm. already shouldn't. It's against the rule. We know that we cannot. But if you do it after, question is before or after it, not mm-hmm. question. But refereeing issues are incredibly important for us coach. We really have to constantly discuss mm-hmm. with top referees how they interpret rules, and equally put pressure on someone to rewrite them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be always a question because it's kind of a subjective decision, right? So everybody's got different opinion, right, on this. So I can see something, but another person maybe doesn't see anything. Especially for me, it's one of the hardest calls sometimes when when the person goes to attack. We call it pressure attack, right? So when there is pressure attack, so there is very narrow edge between pressure attack and attack on preparation, right? So sometimes it's very small difference, like, so whether that person who tried to press, he was going to attack consistently, right, or he stopped and he got attack on preparation, right? So there are many.
What is beginning of attack, or the small difference between these two?
So that is hopefully there is going to be some high technology machine which can decide who gets point. What do you think about that?
Yes. Well, why not? Mm-hmm. Technology is developing incredible. So invent something to our sport, introduce transfer some devices to our sport, the way we referee things or referees interpret the rules. But also, equally, I still think that certain things should be much more defined, much clearer defined. And, for example, I would say a line. For example, line should be defined that line. Of course, at the moment, the definition is a line is good if it's established before before attack starts, before attack starts. But I think for practical reason, much easier would be to say lie on time if it's before final step lunge or step flash of the opponent. That would be much more clear to me for, rather than saying before attack starts. But when is the point when attack starts? You know, there's the debatable. Much better to say it like before final step lunge or step flash. But we don't have specification in rules, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it's supposed to be like more clearer, right?
Yeah. And you know, and also referees. There should be some commission of referees should add something to the rules, like how they interpret attack or how they interpret, you know, preparation.
Yeah,
you know, to define somehow in most kind of easier to comprehend ways, like I suggested, final step lunge or step flash, for example. You know, that's clear. That's evident. Something like that. That should be rewritten and first of all addressed and then. They were called for it for a long time ago, and a lot of top guys in our sport were pushing for it. Somehow nothing happened because probably. It's a matter of time, money, and availability of people wanting to do it. So
hopefully it's gonna be improved soon, so we can have less.
I don't want to sound that I love Sabre. You know, I think it's fantastic sport, very fast, exciting sport, and I can see so many people love Sabre. But I'm sorry about referee. It's just. This is we are in much better position than the moment Sabre is. It's so fast, and the interpretation of rules here is so vary between top experts, between top referees. You know.
Yeah.
So we with FOIL. I personally think EPE is in this respect. EPE is the luckiest guys because there's. Very little thing which referee can make mistake, you know, in EPE. You know?
Yeah, actually, you're right. I think in EPE is basically referee just needs to watch like about some floor hits, right, and some non-valid hits, like when you hit another part of the like not your opponent, but in other things, But in EPI, I think sometimes also happens something like
of course, yes.
Like last confusion on it was in London, right? When it was a 1 second.
Yes, 1 second.
Well, 1 second left, and it was like 8 or 10 attacks in 1 second. So, but I think now they changed it
because referee wasn't very experienced. Mm-hmm. It happened. Also, there was some keeper, the mm-hmm. timekeeper wasn't experienced, and many reasons for that. It shouldn't happen again, such thing. I'm sorry for Korean girl.
Yeah, that was upsetting. Yeah. All right, Jimmy. I have maybe a few last questions. The one question is very important. I come up with this question when after I read some article from your book. So when you fence with the same team, so we have the same people to fence every day, how to make a new skills and new strokes which you want to apply against your teammates? Yes. So it makes sure they're going to work well, because if you find out something new and it works very well for you, your partners you fence with, they're going to find out something, some counteraction against your action, right?
Yes.
So it's not going to, so it, maybe it's very good action for competition, but it's not going to work on training because your teammates, your partners, they are also, they don't want to lose, right? They want to find out something against this, right? So how to make sure you develop the great skills and you can use it in competition?
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of complex, complex question. First of all, I very much believe that in work, in chemistry with some players, that you can get on very well with particular players and you can complement each other in terms of the new developments. So I call it working in pairs. Like Richard Cruz used to work very closely with Ben Montague. Then Richard Cruz worked very closely with Lawrence Halstead. So they had very often 40 people in training. And was a question, who can do that, that last touch, who can give? Then James Davies came and pushed Richard. And obviously Richard first was pushing James Davies. And James Davies then grew up and started pushing Richard. And they work extremely well together. So there is this aspect that the chemistry is right. They can really push each other if they're creative enough. They don't allow to be stale. You just they always look for something else, for change timing, change slightly angle, change distance, change action stroke, put it in different situation. And of course you filter what works, you develop what doesn't work. You can keep trying until it works, but after a while, if this decided it's not working, try so hard that is no point to carry on, probably, unless you clearly make some kind of evident mistake and you have to change distance or moment, whatever. So that's one aspect. Second aspect, it's always good to have obviously push you very much. It's fresh blood for new fence. So the issue of getting stale, serving the same sauce, same, you know, every club, every group, every squad has got the same issue. And also it's good to refresh, good to have a variety, good to have a new fences coming to your camp, or good to go abroad to another country to train, because they are different style, different timing, that way of responding, reacting, like certain fences, like going to Korea could be very, very important because they're Korean so fast, so simple, but very fast, for example. So you have to learn how can you adapt this against such a fast style. And you don't get this kind of people in your country, for example.
Yeah.
You know, so this is all good to get variety. But same time, there is a for working pairs. And there's another thing. Even, you know, if certain action works, if I'm on form and certain action works, I can hit with this action if I, of course, prepare well and draw attention to something else. Anyone or a particular opponent, most times, even if he knows about it, that I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. For example, I used to have Lech Kozijewski was the very famous fencer from Poland.
Yeah.
He got World Youth Championships title, World Youth and Olympic gold in team. And he was my friend. We get on very well. And I remember he had got most incredible beat disengage flash, but the disengage was so small. And the way he did this, that was kind of relevant. And if when new season to his success or not, and when new season started, mm-hmm. when we have a first fight in competition between each other, and when he beat me, then yeah. practically for very long time, maybe several more competitions, I couldn't beat him. I knew that he's going to do that flash. But each mm-hmm. time he was doing this, he was hitting me, although I knew, and I knew that I should. But when I was in form, he was like off form, I was able to, mm-hmm. and he knew that I know, and he knew that he succeeded before, even if I expected. But then it was continued for quite a while that, since I find the timing and the way, he wasn't that effective against me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something to do with his belief, his confidence as well, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. all these things connected. But the way he prepared, his own form, his body language, where I knew it's coming, but I couldn't say when.
Mm-hmm.
So, such a tremendously well, and sometimes I could deal with this quite well, you know. So, what happened? Even if you expect from your opponent action, sometimes you can deal with it. Sometimes you can't. You cannot mm-hmm. find counteraction. You find a way because the way he does it's so great, you know, mm-hmm. so super.
Do you think if you find? Do you think if you find some great action, so I think do you think you should try it like do it often or sometimes you need to keep it for some critical moments and work for the other action?
Well, of course, probably most people when they know that they can any time they do it they can hit. No point to keep doing this because mm-hmm. they create, you create opportunities for opponent to learn
mm-hmm.
to yeah. deal with. So, you just leave it on the shelf mm-hmm. for hard times, for difficult times. Mm-hmm.
For 14-14, right?
In your arsenal, you can pull it out.
Yeah.
For, say it again.
Yeah, when the score is 14-14, you can use it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's better not to let your opponent get to that score. Yeah, it's better use it.
Yes, usually, yeah. usually, yes, usually. Probably, I mean, this is what I would do personally. If I know I can, anytime I do this attack, I can hit him.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept trying to do it over and over again until he learned to deal with this, and I change or. Or I could just leave it and keep it for rainy days. Oh, rainy days.
yeah.
When I really need it. Yeah. And try something new. Learn.
I read about your favorite fencer who inspired you to start fencing. It was Zbigniew Skrudlik, right? If I'm not
wrong. Oh, yes. Zbigniew Skrudlik. It's a phenomenal personality, phenomenal coach, phenomenal fencer. And he had the greatest influence in my personality development of me as a fencer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So
fantastic technique and yeah.
Who was your except Zbigniew? So maybe in the modern time, who is your favorite fencers? You like their style and like achievements? Maybe except Richard Cruz, because of course he's your
yes.
student. But
well, I style by all means.
Yeah.
Yes. From the fencers, currently fencers, available on the you know, I really love Alexander Romanenko, but who can't love fencing, mm-hmm. watching his the way he fence Alexander Romanenko, but it was some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alex Chupanich is quite nice to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And who else? Some French, you know, Enzo Lefort is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to be honest, I like watching the way some Italian fans like. No, I like very much Alessio Paconi, the way he's mm-hmm. conducting his fencing,
when
he closes the distance, closes the gap and putting pressure. Some very admire Ota was incredible, just like a demon of speed,
mm-hmm.
and demon of his blade work. The way he beat Masialas in Moscow 2015 was one of the best fights I ever seen. You know,
yeah, but it's a great fight.
On the back, you know, it was mm-hmm. so. And I must admit, Garek, maybe Alex Max Masialas is a little bit too one-sided, but Garek is Alex is incredibly effective, but mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think so. I would say this is my favorite style, but it's very effective. But Meinhardt, I love Meinhardt, watching the way he
He's very
Hong Kong guys.
Very
Hong Kong guys, Choi.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Choi and Chuan Galong, these two guys are amazing. I like mm-hmm. watching them, the way they hit, score the touches. Who else? Well, Nick Eat had something about the way he used the aggression and mm-hmm. effectiveness of his fencing, and sometimes accuracy. I was watching Nick Eatkin once,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't see any single off target. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was genius fight. I mean, same one time when I watched Kassara,
mm-hmm.
it was whole fight,
okay.
one color light all the time. There wasn't any off target. So you know, anyway, this kind of guys. Yeah,
so
there are lots of amazing fencers. Mm-hmm. The world nowadays.
Can you make some predictions? Who's got the most chances to win the Tokyo
Olympic Games in Tokyo?
If
very, very, very hard.
Yeah, just who's got the most chances?
Who's got the most chance?
Yeah,
it's in men's foil, it's so broad scope. It could be any French fencer like. Enzo could do it maybe one more time, and Italian Facconi, or maybe Grozzo, maybe not so much one of the Russians. Maybe Russians are more like for team. They're mm-hmm. better in team. Maybe individually they're not so explosive. I mean, not so. But certainly one of Italians, or two of Italians, Enzo Fort, one of French. Who else?
But if you could pick the three.
One.
Okay, three. Let's tell. Give me three. Yeah.
Three. Okay. So I will say definitely. Okay, Garek Meinhardt, Enzo Lefort, and Daniele Grozzo. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. It's a very good. So we can check our prediction. Yeah,
but you know, honestly, it's only moment of the day. Mm. You know, Japanese fans, Shikina, for example, you never know.
Yeah,
Shikina.
Absolutely.
Or Saito might have bounced back, Saito, because he done it already. Leipzig 2017. You know.
Yeah, quite possibly. So, yeah, it's Olympic Games. Everybody everybody can
it's
do
so
this.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Alex get some wind in his wings. You know. Or maybe Marcus Mepstedt, you know, so everyone's capable.
Yeah, especially we don't know how people prepared now after COVID, right? Because we just seen only one or two competitions before Olympic Games, maybe some national championships.
Yeah.
So you never know, like our leader, like FIE leaders. Maybe top five, how they can fence now, how well they can do. It's going to be probably, we can see some surprises as well.
Oh, yes, I agree with you.
All right, Zhimik, thank you for dedicating your time to talk to me, to this podcast. I appreciate it a lot. And
pleasure.
Yeah. I hope
thank you for your time as well, and it was really nice to talk to you.
Thank you. It's a big honor for me, and I hope to we can travel soon so we can see each other somewhere in the world.
Yes, me too. Hope so, Taras. For sure.
All right, Remek.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care. All the best.
Thank you. Take care too. Bye.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to this episode, to this pretty long conversation with a legendary coach from UK and Poland, Rzemek Wojciechowski. Rzemek told us a lot of interesting stuff about fencing, and if you want to find out more, you can even buy his book, This is Fencing, where he covers almost every aspect of fencing training and fencing development. And it's, I think it's quite useful. It's really an encyclopedia of fencing. It's quite useful thing to read if you are related to fencing somehow, if you are small guy who started fencing, or if you are a parent or even professional, even, referee, everybody. So I think you can purchase it in Amazon, or just Google it, and I think you're gonna find it out. So that was our first episode of season 2, and I'm gonna try to invite more cool guests who can tell me and you guys listeners something new and something interesting about our beautiful kind of sport. So if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And you can also search my YouTube channel, Incredible Fencing, and Instagram page, where I also post sometimes some cool videos and cool pictures about fencing. And I think that's pretty much it. And thanks again. And I think it's time to say bye-bye and have a nice day. You were listening to Incredible Fencing Podcast. For more information, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel, visit my Instagram page or website.